Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to A Moment with Self. I'm Dr. Daniel Siddig, your host, and as always, I'm very glad to spend another hour in pursuit of psychological awareness with you valuable listeners who are interested in self-care and self-motivation. Well, your attention to this program shows me that you are acknowledging the need for a well-balanced lifestyle and that you believe that through learning and practice, our ability to find such balance will increase, and eventually that will lead us to more success and happiness. And of course, you know that balance cannot be achieved without understanding the challenges and the degrees of difficulties in any task that we are undertaking. Sometimes the problems are not very clear to us. Then our first steps become to learn more about those problems and clarify them in order to find out how they're affecting us and how we can deal with them. That's why the main concern of this program is to talk about the many different approaches in the understanding of our thoughts, our behaviors, our beliefs, and the way that we have a look on these problems, our point of views in understanding them. The kind of understanding that we have eventually help us to be motivated to move forward and not to feel stuck with those challenges or problems. There are many issues and obstacles that face us on a daily basis, and some of these issues are generally more difficult to deal with than others. Those difficult issues usually have deep roots in our past experiences, or they evoke certain feelings that may not be very aware or conscious, and even if they are, sometimes we are not equipped to deal with them yet. Then the pursuit of self-discovery and being invested in finding out what reasonable coping skills we may acquire to deal with such feelings become very important. And again, we must have a deep understanding and acknowledgement of the feelings. Our feelings are generally the emotional and vibrational responses to our mind's perceptions of what we are experiencing. Or maybe they're in every situation, how we can have a take on this situation, what meaning we're taking out of it, and how it's affecting us. So our sensitivities are according to the earlier experiences, and we behave from those experiences. As children, many of our earlier experiences have come from our interactions with our parents or the early caregivers who were responsible for our upbringing. Unfortunately, not always we have ended up with having reliable or responsible enough caregivers who could provide us with security, acceptance, and the nurturance that we had needed and maybe they were not aware of. Many of these caregivers could have also been the victims themselves, the experiences that they had as their own parents were not adequate enough in education or awareness of the issues. So one of the most difficult experiences of a child because of this type of behavior from parents has been dealing with a narcissist parent. By definition, narcissism is generalized personality traits which are characterized by self-centeredness, egotistical attitudes, sense of entitlement, vanity, and lack of empathy for others' feelings. Freud has suggested that there might be a common component of such egotistical self-preservations or the desire that we have a fulfilled life through our instinctual survival mechanism, which he has referred to it as primary narcissism. But since we are born without a sense of ourselves as individuals, and this sense has been a part of our developmental capabilities, this self-development actually happens in infancy and the early part of the childhood. So the parental controls and the expectations that they have can easily intrude upon the child's primary narcissism and form the child's ideal sense of self. In other words, once those primitive defenses are in the child instinctually and the parents' needs or their own expectations start being projected onto the child, the child's sense of self becomes distorted and a lot of difficult things happen. For example, if you imagine that this sense of self that was installed by the parents in a child gives the message that you are not being good enough, you're inadequate, you're inappropriate, you're weak, you're incapable, you're not worthy, then imagine this child will feel shame, guilt, embarrassment, having troubled relationships, feeling broken, being indecisive, being rageful, being anxious. And as a result of all of this, low self-esteem will be the end result of such life, which eventually is going to end to being depressed or have abrupt reactivity. All of these difficult feelings that one experiences could easily become a lifestyle of agony, misery, and unfulfillment. Narcissistic parents can do this to a child, and that's very unfortunate. I have invited someone who has survived personally such parental care and has written about her experiences as the child of a narcissist, and I've asked her to join us today to share her understanding of this conflict. Tina Fuller began her professional career in the financial services industry, and as an entrepreneur, she has owned and operated a word processing company and a custom gift basket business. Throughout Tina's life, she knew that something was very flawed with the relationship with her mother. At age 39, she finally discovered that what was going on with her was about her mom's narcissism. She began her journey to healing by doing extensive research on narcissism, including a review of psychological studies, journals, books, videos, and the DSM-4. Tina realized that there were no books written from the victim's point of view. This is what fueled her desire to write a book named It's My Turn. She is very passionate about helping others who are struggling to find answers to many challenges of having a narcissistic parent. Tina brings her practical understanding of narcissism today to us, and her personal experiences together will assist us to understand this phenomenon, this personality disorder, actually, in a better way. She also will talk about a four-step program called PACE that explains how to improve the overall quality of life and move on beyond the wound. Let's welcome Tina together. Hi, Tina.
Hi, Dr. Sadiq. How are you?
Good. Nice to have you online with us. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to hear from your experiences. Since I read your book, it has a lot of elements that many people go through without realizing what's happening to them.
Right, right. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Sure. So tell me, just let's begin with your book. Why did you write this book? What happened?
Well, once I found out that my mother was a narcissist, I, as you mentioned in the bio there, I just dove right in and wanted to learn as much as possible. And once I did obtain a lot of all this information, I wanted to share it with others because I knew I wasn't the only one out there who was struggling with this. But as you mentioned, there are no other books that are written from the adult child of a narcissist. And I thought, wow, if I had had something like that, it would have made me progress even quicker. So I decided to go ahead and share my information and help other people.
I'm glad that you did that. you know, it's also, Tina, I believe this is a subject that even a lot of people understand it and they figure out they don't even talk about it, you know.
Right, right.
I'm going to include myself. I have known this about myself for a very long time, and I still have a hard time acknowledging it and talking about it. My father had some narcissistic traits, which I was aware of it, especially through my education and learning. But still, as of today, it's still not very easy to talk about it. So I really congratulate you for having the courage to come and talk about it. How did that feel for you when you were dealing with it?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you said.
How did that feel for you, that challenge that I'm talking about, to come out and talk about it?
Actually, I'm very passionate about it at this point, because I remember how hard it was to face and how hard it was to go through this and feel, again, like I said, very passionate about helping the next person who it might help them so they don't have to have all these questions flying around their head, and wished I had that. So it's actually, I'm quite comfortable with it now.
Very nice. But in the beginning, how was it in the beginning?
In writing the book, you mean?
In coming to terms with it.
Oh, it was very difficult because your first acknowledgement, oh, there's something wrong with my parent.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like a little bit of a shock.
Right.
Yeah, it's like a shock because you're thinking, wow, okay, they have a mental problem. So, of course, that's going to be a shock to anyone. So, but now I'm totally fine with it.
Well, what are some of the struggles or damages that you have talked about as the child of a narcissist?
Well, it's a lot of what you mentioned earlier. You feel broken, flawed. You can't do anything right. The parent, no matter how hard you try, everyone looks up to their parents and wants that pat on the head. And you keep trying, no matter how much they berate you or put you down, you just keep going back to get more. And you're hoping maybe this time if I do this one thing, they'll like me or I'll get praise. But it's like going to an empty well. You keep going and there's no water in the well, but you still think, well, maybe today I'll get some water. You don't. It never ends. So it's a pretty hard feeling.
It's never
horrible.
Enough. Whatever you do at the end, you still need to do something else that you haven't done yet.
Right. That is correct.
Mm-hmm. Right. So can you talk about some of those experiences, how it affected you as an adult?
Well, what happens, as you mentioned, your self-esteem gets completely torn up. You have no self-esteem. So as you grow up, you may tend to make wrong choices. Unfortunately, you may get in a relationship, and as soon as the person begins to say something negative, you take it extremely personal. You're very indecisive. For example, if you have a group of people and they say, "What do you want to do for lunch?" And you're almost afraid to suggest something because you're afraid your suggestion will be rejected. That type of thing. So you carry this pain into your adulthood. You don't even realize you're doing it. Someone who you are in a relationship may start putting you down, but because you're so used to that, it's almost your normal. It's okay. It still doesn't feel good, but you're so used to it because of the parent, you tend to accept more of it than, say, someone who's a little bit healthier than you.
Right. Right, that's very true. From my experience, somehow, Tina, I think for me was a little bit of opposite of that. You know, I think the results could be maybe, two different ways. I think if you associate with that narcissistic parent, I think you end up being more of like them. So that's what happened to myself, you know. So as I learned about myself, the narcissism that my father had affected me in a way that I was overconfident or overpowering or overzealous and trying to dictate my ways to others. So for me, it kind of worked the opposite of that. And I had a exaggerated sense of myself and how, you know, I saw the world and how I felt that I was entitled to a lot of things that I was doing. So I can clearly see that it could, you know, in you it could work in a different way than in somebody like myself. So
absolutely,
of those possibilities are there.
Absolutely. And, you know, as each person is, we are individuals. So you're very correct in saying it can go one way or the other or somewhere in the middle. It just, everyone is different and reacts to having that type of parent completely different. And it also depends on the range of narcissism, I think. The range of the parent themselves. They can have a little bit of narcissism, they can have a medium, or they can be in a high range. There's a lot of ranges in that as well.
Correct. However, I think that it doesn't matter, you know, how you start reacting to it. I think the feeling of it's never enough and you're not enough and you always have to be on top of every situation, regardless of which of these sides you take, I think that's very common. So it's
absolutely
a sense of inadequacy, is a sense of unfulfillment, is a sense of being flawed and not being, good enough. I think all of those are very common in everyone who suffers from a narcissist parent.
Right. That is correct.
Right. And I also agree that degree of narcissism, it's a big factor because sometimes it's not a full-blown narcissism in individuals and it's just the traits and, they just act as a very much defensive position. There are many psychological defenses that we grow up with, and narcissism is one of those defenses that we want to project our own fears or our own anxieties onto someone else or on an object or an issue that, you know, we want to deal with. So as a result of it, we deal with our own fears in giving it to somebody else. So as defenses, we end up being protecting our survival, and that's what happens in the degree of the severity of it, because some people are less afraid, some people are more afraid, and based on those defenses create different degrees of narcissism.
Right, I agree.
So what range was your mom in? I'm curious to know that.
She is in the very high range. She's very high. Very high range. So.
And how did that affect you?
Well, there were five of us, five children, and unfortunately one had passed away in 1991. But each one of us, I broke it down into different categories. You either conform to the parent, which is the one that you would do everything you can to make the parent happy. Just keep trying and keep trying. Then you've got, let's call it a rebel, someone who rebels and just does not get along with the parent at all and tries to have an individuality. And then there is the runner, someone who just, let me get away from this person. They don't know what's going on with them, but it's so uncomfortable they just try to stay away as much as possible. So I named that the runner. So you can fall into any of those categories.
So you named three categories. One is conformist. That's the one that keeps trying to conform to the requirements, fulfill the expectations, and just be the good child.
Good girl.
And the other one you call the rebel that doesn't get along and stays in the face of that person and has conflicts and end up, being in odds with that person.
Correct.
And
then
the third one you categorize as runner is the one that doesn't deal with the problem, just gets away and just, you know, hides behind other issues and doesn't deal with it.
Mm-hmm. Or physically takes himself out. You know, we'll leave home at an early age, that kind of thing. Yeah, exactly. And doesn't call much, you know, things like that. They physically take themselves out of the relationship and only have a limited contact with the parent.
So which one of these three you categorize yourself within?
Well, honestly, I started off as a conformer because I was the female child of her second family. She was married twice.
Mm-hmm.
So I was the female, and they normally like to take the same-sex child so that they can make them an extension of themselves. They want
right.
the child to be such as they are.
Right.
So, yeah. So I started off as a conformer, and my older brother, who the one that passed away, he was definitely the rebel. So I started off a conformer, but as I grew up, he lived to 29, and I did have some example of, okay, something's not right here. So between me starting out as a conformer and him totally rebelling, I got the sense of, wait a minute, this isn't right. So he gave me some really good examples that I do need to stand up for myself. So I'm actually in the rebel category at this point, I would have to say. Well, now I'm healthy, but at that, you know, up until now I was the rebel. I didn't want to, I would argue with her, I'd try to reason with her, and it does not work because they do not change.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So did you ever run? Did you separate yourself eventually from her?
I wouldn't call her for weeks at a time, but that wasn't really, I wouldn't consider that a runner, because the runner just gets away and stays away, can go on for years, and I did not do that. At this point in my life, I have cut off communication, but for a different reason. I'm not running. It's because she is just too toxic and is affecting my ability to be healthy.
So it's an aware choice. So you're
exactly.
talking about our own ability to make aware choices
Absolutely.
In response to such person.
Correct. That's right.
Very good. So, you know, from what I understood from you, and I agree with, we can go through different modes of these three that you named. Maybe we
mm-hmm.
try one of these and we see
mm-hmm.
what works.
Mm-hmm.
According to my understanding until today, the only way that I've learned that, you know, to deal with a narcissistic father is to stand up to him. I think it's not
mm-hmm.
to fight. It's
right.
clarifying boundaries as much as
Correct.
Possible. Because I think what they don't understand and they have difficulty, number one, I think the biggest issue is that lack of empathy.
Right.
I don't believe a narcissist, or at least a full narcissist, understands anyone's feelings. I don't think
Correct.
They have the ability to
No.
Be informed of anyone else's feeling. And even with themselves, I don't think they really fully understand their own feelings, because they're so afraid that if
mm-hmm.
they feel feelings, they're going to break down. So
yes,
that
I've found anger and sadness is pretty much what they feel.
Right, right. So, which both of them are toxic, you know, as you said.
Mm-hmm.
And if they are sitting with a lot of anger,
mm-hmm.
you know, eventually this anger has to explode on someone.
Right.
Because they don't have a way of dealing with that internal sense of insecurity, which creates the anger. And
Correct.
They don't even want to admit that sense of insecurity, because
oh.
they have learned as a child to
mm-hmm.
feel full of, you know, full of power and,
right.
you know, very, very strong-handed. So
mm-hmm.
for them, that's the only way they know, and they cannot acknowledge any kind of weakness inside of themselves. They will
Correct.
Feel that they're going to fall apart if they
mm-hmm.
acknowledge that. So
right.
deal with them, I believe the best strategy I have learned was to stand up, you know, and
mm-hmm.
just clarify the boundaries, demand
mm-hmm.
their respect. Because
mm-hmm.
once you demand their respect, they are not looking at you as another victim that they can inflict their, you know, their vicious powers upon. So now once they have a sense of respect for you, which is by force most of the time, because they don't
mm-hmm.
have it. Because you don't allow them to, you know, to come
right.
closer. I think in those cases, and again, as you said, according to the severity of the narcissism,
right.
I think that's
right.
pretty much one of the ways I have found. You have talked about the four-step program. Can you talk about that?
Oh, certainly. I called it PACE, P-A-C-E. And I'll just tell you what each letter stands for. P would stand for protection. When you're dealing with a narcissist, you, in the beginning especially, you always want to feel protected, because
right.
what they do is attack you. They put you down. They berate you. So you need to feel protected. And I go through in the book, it'll tell you how, what the steps are to do that.
Can you briefly tell us what do you mean by protected protection?
Sure. You can make, like, say, an imaginary shield, or and you can think of them as a ball, or you know, bouncing up against the shield or wall or whatever thing you want to imagine, and they bounce off. In other words, they'll try to attack you, but it's not going to get in because of that wall. You're protected.
Mm-hmm.
And then the A would be for accepting. Which we discussed a little bit before. You have to come to an acceptance that there really is something wrong with your parent. And that is a hard pill to swallow. So that's the second one.
So what do you do when you accept them? Does that mean that you build a better relationship with them through that acceptance, or is it just an internal sense?
It's an internal acknowledgement that they have a mental problem, that it's not you. You're not doing anything wrong. It is them, and you are aware, and you accept the fact that, yes, they have a problem. It's not something I'm doing. And just the fact of knowing that there's something wrong with your parent can be pretty devastating.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So it's kind of a shock a little bit, as I said earlier. So that's what the A is, acceptance. C is
change. You know, I think at that point of acceptance, our own even good narcissism, which is kind of the earlier narcissistic defenses we have, I think those get wounded, because then if our parents are not good enough, then we are not good enough.
Ah, good point. Good point.
Yeah, so I think that's a part of the problem. Our own narcissism kind of gets wounded.
And I looked at it as, she has damaged me. So
right.
what am I going to do about it?
Right.
I mean, eventually that's where I got to.
Right.
Yeah.
And it is not my problem. You know, it was really not my problem. This was a problem that was given to me. Now I have power over it to choose not to react in the same ways that I have done before.
Exactly.
I think that choice become very important. I remember when it clicked in my head that this is what happened to me, I think the only thing that helped me at that time was to be able to make a choice of how to deal with him after that. You know, before that, I felt stuck, that I had to just either pull myself away or fight with him, you know.
Right.
So it was really an awkward feeling all along before that. It was either a fight or a flight, you know, which, you know, I was dealing with. But then once I really understood that, you know, this wasn't about me. I hadn't done anything wrong, and it was about his disorder. Then I think at that time it helped me a lot to know that now I have choices. Now I can deal with him in certain ways the way I want, and in other ways, you know, I just stay away.
Right. And that leads us into C, which is change. And don't expect them to change, because they're not going to change.
Right.
And unfortunately, if you look at the big picture, it's kind of unfair, but you have to change. You have to change what you're doing. Right. You have to change how you're reacting with them.
Absolutely.
Stop fighting with them. You're not going to get anywhere. You will lose. So you have to change your reaction and your actions with them, with your interactions.
I'm very glad to hear what you're saying, because I believe this is the most important part of the message that you and I are together bringing to our listeners.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you are dealing with a narcissistic parent, the only way that you can feel better and get out of this dilemma is by you making adjustments, changes, different ways of feeling and thinking about yourself that can help you. Because a narcissistic parent doesn't have the ability to change. I see a lot of couples and individuals, and in my practice I see how even when they are willing to come and get help And I'm trying to, you know, work with the narcissist, and I explain to them what they're doing, what they're going through, and they acknowledge that, and they understand there is something wrong. They cannot really do much about it. They end up doing this thing over and over and over. And I often see the children of these people, which are adult children, you know, 20s, 30s, and I see, you know, when they're so ragefully, they blast into these parents in the session and explain what they went through. They, you know, they seem like they say that they understand that, but then as soon as they leave the session, they go back doing the same things, you know.
Right.
So the only
right.
way that one can deal with this issue is to get help for themselves. I think
right.
as the child of a narcissist, one of the very first things that one has to do is to work in therapy. I know
very
it worked
important.
For me. I'm sure that's what you got through finally to get to where you were. And I don't believe without working on self as you know, an individual who's understanding her or his own psychological way of feeling, behaving, dealing with issues. You cannot do anything with the narcissist except to work on yourself.
Right. And then, as you mentioned, then you, and lastly, would be the E in PACE, which is empowerment. Because once you change, you will become empowered. And you have to work on your self-esteem and things like that to build yourself up. That's where I got the PACE from. And how I came up with it is I just looked back at all the stages that I went through. And that's how I came up with the PACE. But
right.
the first thing is definitely protect yourself, because you're still, you're like, it's all so new to you, so you have to be protected to when you're first starting out.
So the empowerment, can you talk a little bit more about that? What do you exactly mean by empowerment, and how you keep on feeling empowered?
Well, by changing what you do. Each time it's almost like practicing basketball. Let's say you want to be a basketball star. You have to keep doing it. You have to go and practice. It's not going to just happen because you figure it out. You have to keep trying and change what you're doing. And say, for example, you want to, I like to draw. Okay, I'll give you an example. And I thought, oh, I can't draw. I'm a lousy, I can't draw anything. So you sit down and you try it. Well, gee, and then it may come out okay, and you think, wow, I guess maybe I can draw a little bit, and that's empowering. So you need to build up your self-esteem, and all the messages you received as a child saying you can't do something, as you become empowered, that gets softer and softer and softer until it's gone. You have to keep crying.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Now, the question that comes up for me is the issue of love. Do you feel loved by your mom?
Absolutely not.
No?
No, because I do not think they're capable of love. They can't even truly love themselves because they feel so insecure. They're desperate. They're like having a bucket with a hole in it. They're never full. So they cannot love you in the true sense of the word.
I understand, but isn't it ironic that, you know, from a narcissist, what we understand first is that they love themselves, and they're full of themselves, and they, you know, they say it's nothing better than them.
But that's a front.
Okay.
They don't really believe that. Yeah, that's just the show they put on for everyone. They don't really believe that. When they're alone, they're very, very insecure.
Uh-huh.
That's why they portray they're smarter, they're more handsome or pretty or whatever the case may be. And outwardly, they'll pretend to help you with something, but it really ends up about them.
And I agree with what you said about the smart. You know, I think one of the traits that a narcissist use is intellectualization. They become very much intellectual. They are very good speakers. They have a lot of general knowledge, and by being in that shield of all knowing, they can protect themselves even more. Do you have the same experience with your mom?
Somewhat, yes. What will happen is if she gets in an area she's unfamiliar with, she'll change the story.
Right.
She'll change it. You know, I didn't say that. That's not what I meant.
Right.
You know, she'll change it to escape being wrong because they cannot accept blame. That's one of the big things that the listeners should know as well. If they do something wrong and you call them on it, that you might, if you're lucky, you might get them to admit that they did whatever it is they did, but they will always justify it. There will always be an answer. Well, I did it because, or if you hadn't done this, I wouldn't have done it. See, it's, they never accept any responsibility for their actions. It's always someone else's fault.
That is the key word, I guess. They're not able to take responsibility for their own actions because everything they do, they tend to think of being perfect and this is the way they cannot see any other choices beside the choices that they are making. So it's kind of a very rigid way of thinking, in other words.
Yeah.
Narcissist doesn't have much flexibility, doesn't have much ability to change. So that's why they're stuck with the position that they are, and they're afraid of moving away from the position, because if they lose their grip on whatever that they're holding on to, then they're going to fall apart and they're going to break down. And that's something that they're trying to avoid all their life.
Absolutely. They have to keep that control. They have to have control. My mother tried to go to therapy. I do believe they have a sense something's wrong somewhere. But, of course, it's not them. It's everybody else. But they will go to therapy, and she would say, oh, he doesn't know what he's talking about. You know, or, you know, as in the book, I gave an example. She would go against, she was a nurse, and she would go against the doctors that she was right and they were wrong. You know, she was a LPN. And tell me somebody with a PhD doesn't know what, you know more than him. It's just how they portray themselves. You know, they know everything and you are wrong. So therapy doesn't always work. If they're in a high range, I believe. Possibly low range might work well, but high range, I don't see how they can get any help because they can't accept they're wrong. So,
The only times that I see narcissists in my practice is not because they understand they have narcissistic traits and they come in. They have never come in for that reason.
No.
Generally, probably 90% of the cases that I have, they come in for couples work because the marriage gets to a point that, you know, the other partner cannot tolerate the narcissistic behavior, and the marriage is on the verge of breaking down. So that's the time that they come in, and, you know, and that's when we start working with the individual narcissist. However, again, in my experience, they may understand what's going on. They may try to make some adjustments, but at the end, it is often it's the other partner that has to make adjustments and understanding if they want to stay married. Otherwise, it becomes almost impossible to change that narcissist.
Right. I agree.
That's such a, you know, such a sad situation that a person cannot change themselves. You know, that's very sad, actually.
It is. And I think for the readers to also, or listeners to also know that there comes a point in this whole situation where you must get to a point of forgiveness. And it's not about forgiving them for all the horrible things that they are doing or have done to you. It's so you can let it go, because you can stay stuck in this forever if you don't let it go. And realize, you know, I forgive them. They can't help it. They just simply have to protect themselves, and that's what it's all about. That's why it's always about them, because they have to stay in that protective mode and control. Otherwise, like you said, they'll fall apart, and it's too scary. They can't do that.
And for them to stay in that protective mode, it's very amusing to look at the different tactics and strategies that they use to, you know, achieve their goals. They can manipulate the other people in any possible way. You know, the poor me strategy, the arrogant strategy, the hard, face or the hard attitude strategy. There's so many different ways that they try to get through the other person, and there's
absolutely
no end to it.
Right. There's no end, and that's something they do change. They change their tactics. That's all that's going to change. they They may use crying. They may use yelling. They may say things that are way below the belt, like you've done something and they know about it because, unfortunately, you've told them. So they may say, well, you remember that time I helped you out with this? And they know which buttons to push for each child. They know each child's weak spots. They're masters at that. And so they'll push it. They'll lie. They will change a story. They'll do anything to achieve what they want to achieve. They come first. It doesn't matter. Always.
I guess we both have to admit that they are able to change, but only their tactics,
only
right?
Their that is correct. And, I mean, I'll give you a great example. This is in the book as well, but my brother died of AIDS. And he knew something was wrong with her, but he didn't know what. And as he was in the hospital, he and I were laughing. And she got very annoyed because I guess she didn't know what we were laughing at. And he said, and she stormed out of the room. So she leaves. He says, don't worry, she'll be back in a minute. And she'll be crying. Sure enough, a couple minutes later, here she comes crying. And then he'd look at me and he'd whisper, she's going to get mad any minute. So he saw the patterns.
Right.
They change to whatever they attention. The attention has to be on him. For example, he was dying, and she would throw some kind of fit. And he'd say, Mom, I'm dying here, not you. I'm the one who's dying. And so even with something as horrible as that may sound, and I can laugh about it now, but they have to have the attention. It doesn't matter.
I think that was a very, very good example of how unempathetic they can be. You know,
right.
Because as you just explained it, that you know, that broke my heart of how someone can feel so cold that when their own son or daughter is sick, dying, or in a bed, it's about them. It's still about their feelings. It's still about how they're hurt. It's still about how rude you are or how inconsiderate you are. It's never about having empathy for that person that is in pain and it's in the needy place. It's always about them and how their feelings are hurt. I think that's a huge example of what you brought.
And another thing to mention here is a narcissist will also think that because you are their child, that you must think like they do. Okay? For another example, I had a kidney infection when I was a little kid, and I was hurting. She didn't believe me. Oh, you're just faking it. I wasn't faking it. I was in a lot of pain. But see, because she will fake an ailment to get attention, she thinks, oh, she must be doing what I do. You see, you understand what I'm saying?
Yes,
they will project what they would normally do in a situation. Oh, they must be doing like I do. They're just faking it to get attention because that's some of the things they do.
They think it's one of their tactics that you're using on them.
Right, exactly. You're using their same type of tactics.
Right.
Exactly.
And again, that shows you how a lack of empathy is working for them. You know, if they cannot understand that what if you're really in pain and you're suffering and you need help? They don't have that muscle of understanding anybody and what they're going through. So it's always about strategies and ways of getting things done rather than feeling feelings.
Right. Or when my brother did finally pass away, she wanted to bury him in a place where she's going to be buried. He told her specifically not to do that, but she did it anyway.
Wow.
That's another. You see, so like I said, she's in a very high range, and you know there was a lot of anger I carried for many years, but now it's just I know what and how she is, and I really, truly, from my heart, I feel sorry for her because she's that warped, you know, she's that sick.
I call it disabled. I think that's a disability.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
people who cannot walk or they don't have certain body parts, and we call those disability. However, we don't see the emotional parts that are missing in people and create disabilities. I think narcissism is such a huge disability which nobody talks about or understand, because they come across as such such powerful, superior, all important,
right,
omnipotent,
right,
people. So actually the picture that they're portraying for other people is coming from a lot of strength and a lot of abilities. So you really feel that they are such a needy and disabled person.
Turn it on and off when they need it.
Well, the only time that they show that neediness, again, is as a strategy of getting you to do something for them.
Correct.
So it's really, even when they show that vulnerability, is not true, it's not real.
Or they can be very evil. They can be very, very cruel and mean, honestly.
Yeah.
They can go either way. I mean, it depends what they know will work for each person. And that's, they have a very keen sense in homing in on what each person can give them. What can I get out of them? They're takers.
Right.
You know, what can I get out of this one? What can I get out of that one? I can get sympathy from this one. I can get her to pay this for me for that. It depends on, they know they have an ability to figure out what they can get from each person. But it's always about them.
Right. And I like what you said about the people who are the suppliers to feed their securities. So I think that I would like to end our program today with talking about really how, as the children or people around a narcissist, can help themselves not to be the suppliers. What do you have to recommend about that? I know we talked about the change and about creating boundaries. But how can they realize that they are suppliers and need to stop that?
By standing up to them. That's really the only way you can stop supplying them with what they need. And again, to bring up the pace again, really those are the steps you need to take. But you've got to try to set the boundaries, as much as possible. And depending, again, on the range of the parent, what boundary? There is no boundary. You can draw the line and there is no line. But really protecting yourself and trying to set boundaries and stick to it. Don't give in. That's really important.
Tina, about boundaries, I want to speak a couple of minutes about boundaries. I think boundaries are something that people are not much aware of, and I think that is the first if a parent who's narcissistic does not have boundaries, it doesn't mean that we cannot have boundaries. If we are able to understand who we are, how we function, what are important to us and what is not, and to what extent I start and I end, I think that is the very first step of setting boundaries. It's not about the other person's lack of boundary. It's about our own personal boundaries that we understand who we are and what's right for us. I think if that doesn't happen, you can easily become the supplier that you're talking about.
I think we are. We are suppliers. I mean, it's you don't even realize it, especially if you're the child of one. You don't even realize you're supplying them until you figure all of this out.
Right.
You see, so, like I supplied my mother for years and didn't know I was doing it because I was out for getting attention or getting that pat on the head. So I automatically, children are almost automatically suppliers.
I got to share from my experience with you, Tina. At this point of my life, I have learned that it's okay to be some sort of a supplier. But now because I know my boundaries, I have choices. So if there are areas that I can give a little and, him, I go ahead and I do that, but then I want to be okay with that when I do that. I do it on my own terms because it's okay for me, because I'm aware of what I'm doing. So it's because he's needy of me or because what he thinks of me, not how he's going to deal with me. So that's what I'm trying to be very clear with our listeners. The personality that we have, the way that we are, the way that we know ourselves is the very first step. If we do not know ourselves, if we're not able to know what's right for us, what is appropriate, there is no way that we can get out of this vicious cycle
right.
with these kinds of parents. But if we know where we are and
mm-hmm.
what is it okay for us to do for them or not to do for them, I think
right.
that's the first step.
Yep. Yep, I agree.
Right. Another thing that you had talked about is, you know, the way that they are users and they're martyrs. What did you mean by that?
They will say, oh, look what all I've sacrificed for you.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll give you examples. But a lot of these examples are things that a parent is supposed to do.
Right.
They're not, you see what I'm saying? Like, oh, I did this for you. I helped you out. Well, you're supposed to do that. You're my parent. You're supposed to help me learn about this. So they have a tendency to flip-flop, whichever, like we were saying, whichever situation fits, that's the one they'll go for. They're either a victim or, I've done all of this for you. I've sacrificed so much. Well, you're supposed to take care of your kids.
Exactly. So
yeah.
all of the attributes that we're talking about, I think hopefully it's helpful to our listeners to
yeah.
understand what kind of a person they're dealing with. So if they are noticing any of these type of behaviors,
mm-hmm.
you know, now you have a responsibility to take care of yourself, to
exactly
yourself, as you said, to have acceptance, and you have to change the ways that you believe, and you feel empowered within yourself to set those boundaries. So I
exactly
really like what you have done in this book with the recommendations you have made. It has
mm-hmm.
brought a lot of clarity to a person who has been in this type of situation and they
mm-hmm.
cannot deal with you know, the consequences of what they have gone through. So I believe you have done a great job, and I really thank you for the work you have done. And are there any other recommendations that you like to make? Anything else that you would like to add before we end this program?
Well, I would like to say that it is a lot of work. It's not easy to get out of this. It's not just knowing that your parent is narcissistic is not going to fix anything. You have to put in the work. And you are going to have times where you might kind of what I call backslide a little bit. And then you just have to pick yourself up and move forward, because you can get out of this. You're not stuck forever, and you're not alone. And that's kind of what I've tried to put in this book as well, is that it helps people to realize, wow, I'm not the only one, because that's what happened to me. I was out there struggling, and I got all these technical books, and I'm reading, and it really did help me a lot. But I really wanted to hear from somebody who's been through it so that I would feel so not so alone. So that's why I wrote the It's My Turn book. Yep.
Beautiful. I agree. I don't want to call it a battle, but it feels like a constant battle with these people. However,
yeah.
I think battle ends if you're not battling with yourself. If you
right.
accept that you are good enough, that you mm-hmm. are able enough, that you are lovable, that you are, you know, acceptable. You know, if
mm-hmm.
you finally come to terms with your own insecurities, that's
right.
the only time that you can deal with a situation like a narcissistic parent. I guess
right.
our own insecurities are what's going to be feeding, you know, these parents as the suppliers.
Right.
As long as our own insecurities are not dealt with, we are going to be stuck in this battle.
Right.
I see
that's
this
right.
on and on and on. Individuals who are not taking responsibility for themselves and their own feelings and dealing with them, they're going to be stuck with
mm-hmm.
very, very, very negative feelings in these relationships, suffer all life, and not
mm-hmm.
still be able to get, you know, out of these bad feelings to any extent. So
right.
I guess that self-discovery, self-understanding,
yes.
finding self-esteem and self-worth more than anything
mm-hmm.
else.
Yeah, because even if the parent is gone, you're going to be playing those tapes in your head and still believe them. So you have to become empowered.
And you're going to bring it to your children. You know, it's not.
Exactly.
It doesn't end. You know,
exactly.
This is. I think I was telling you about my experience with a certain region of the country I come from,
correct.
Iran. And from this certain region, you see that the tendency of having narcissism is much higher than other areas. So I can see how genetically has become predisposed, you know. So a lot of people, just because they're raised in a culture or the understanding that narcissism is the way to be, they are developing it further into their own children, and it's going on and on without any stop.
Right.
So as long as that the insecurities are there, we cannot break the chains of narcissism. So it's an individual responsibility to do your own work, to seek therapy, to seek self-support, to help yourself to create these boundaries.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
So how people can get your book?
Okay, I am on, you can either visit my website, which is www.narcissism-answers.com, or you can send me an email, which is tinafuller@mac.com, M-A-C.com, or you can go to lulu.com, and there you can just type in "it's my turn" or Tina Fuller, and it will come up.
Very good. Thank you so much for the time that you shared with me and our listeners. I believe the information that you're providing is very valuable, and I look forward to hear from more of your successes in the future.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Sadiq.
Okay. My pleasure.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.